This is the Historians Podcast. I'm Bob Cudmore. Our topic today is the architecture of downtown Troy, New York. And our guest is Diana Waite. Thank you for joining us, Diana.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Diana Waite is president of Mount Ida Press in Albany, which specializes in history topics. Previously, she served for a decade as executive director of the Preservation League of New York State. Her work on regional history, architecture, building materials, and industrial archaeology has been published nationally. Her latest book, published by SUNY Press, is The Architecture of Downtown Troy, an illustrated history. The Architecture of Downtown Troy, an illustrated history. Why did you want to do a book about downtown Troy?
Well, I love doing historical research. I love sort of finding out long forgotten information and making, you know, connections among various sources. And it's like detective work to me. I just find it really fascinating. And every project is different. Every building is different. I live downtown, and my husband, John Waite, and I have fixed up two distressed row houses quite some time ago now. And also, you know, the subject matter was right there outside my front door.
Oh.
You know, Troy has sort of street after street of notable and background buildings. So the subject matter was just right there waiting.
So you're saying you lived in downtown Troy?
Yes, I still live in.
Oh, you still live in downtown Troy.
Yeah.
Why is downtown Troy so architecturally important or interesting?
Well, you know, in the 19th century, Troy was really an industrial giant. You know, it made millions of horseshoes. Bells and cast iron stoves were made in Troy and sold all over the world. It was a very prosperous city in the 19th century. Its population was very enterprising and civic-minded. And the people who were living there and working there supported local architects and builders. But they also brought in nationally known architects for special buildings.
Mm. And so it was a special place for good buildings, if you will. But another point, is it not, that so many of these significant buildings have been preserved in Troy and in other cities, maybe Albany is an example? That's not so.
Well, it was unfortunate that there was an urban renewal program undertaken in Troy. However, it was sort of late in the urban renewal program. So there wasn't as much torn down as there was in other places. Troy also did not apparently catch the eye of Governor Rockefeller. You know, it was not the capital. So, you know, there were not huge building projects that he was behind. You know, Troy, you know, compared to Albany, and also, you know, Albany has 787 running up its side. So Troy escaped that. I think also people really care about Troy's history. We had a contractor who was working on our house, and we were talking to him about the book. And he has worked on many buildings downtown. And he said, you know, the buildings are really important. The historic buildings are really important to their owners. That's why they're here.
Mm-hmm.
I just thought that was a very interesting comment. And also there's been, you know, a resurgence of investment the past
few years,
and you know, many small businesses have been able to afford setting up their shops in downtown. So,
And I saw in the materials for your book the quote from the New York Times that called Troy one of the most perfectly preserved 19th century downtowns in the United States. I mean, they shoot period movies there, right?
Yes, they have. And, you know, they're really great streetscapes. There are many interiors that are still intact and have been used as movie sets. And actually, at the end of our block, there is a garage. It's really, you know, a carriage house. And people have been taking wedding pictures there, which I found sort of surprising, but apparently it's popular.
Really?
Yeah.
Now, how long did you work on this project? I gather it was a long time.
I think it was about 11 years. It was a long time.
Hmm. And you had help along the way. You said your husband, he's kind of a well-known architect, right? John Waite Associates?
Yes, yeah. He is.
Was
I'm
he
happy
involved?
To say.
What's that?
Yes, he was definitely involved. He, you know, read the manuscript too many times, I'm sure he thought. And, you know, he answered many questions for me. I mean, he was a native Trojan, so he has a long background in Troy history. He had endured many weekends when I wouldn't go out and do anything except write. But there was also a lot of help from the staff at the Rensselaer County Historical Society and from their board members. The staff here at Mount Ida Press did a lot of newspaper searching, and we also, you know, used a lot of, we had a lot of good help from various archives. In fact, the Rensselaer County Historical Society, which has just changed its name to Historic Rensselaer County, is the co-publisher of the book with SUNY Press.
Mm-hmm. And can you give us an idea of the photographs and other illustrations in the book?
There are 236 images.
Wow.
And there was a lot to keep track of. We scoured many, many archives, including the historic Rensselaer counties, the New York State Library, the New York Public Library, RPI, Library of Congress. And one of the things that we had trouble with, despite all our good efforts with looking in various archives, was that we could not find an image of the first Troy to Green Island bridge. And one day I was at the Albany Institute looking at the Thomas Cole exhibit there, and there was a right there in front of me, leaping off the wall, was a drawing by Thomas Cole from the mid-1830s of Troy with the bridge right in the foreground. So we changed the layout of the book to accommodate that. I had some old images from New Orleans of the first Presbyterian Church, the architect's drawings for that. And we also found some architectural drawings at the New York Public Library and at Avery and Architectural Library in New York.
Why was it so important to have the picture of the bridge?
Well, because it was a really important structure, you know, to connect. It was a railway bridge. It also had space for carriages and people to walk. It was a very important link to the West. I mean, so historically the bridge was very important, and it was rare to have a bridge going the whole way across the Hudson at that time.
Now, you have some current photos, and I believe you credit a photographer from Albany, I believe, Gary Gold?
Yes, Gary was great. He took all of the new photographs for the book, spent a great deal of time walking the streets trying to get rid of cars in front of buildings. Did a really great job.
By the way, we're talking with Diana Waite about her book, The Architecture of Downtown Troy, an Illustrated History. Let me ask you about the architects of the buildings in downtown Troy. You found a lot about them, but maybe first, was your husband John Waite or his firm, they've done work there themselves?
Yes, they have. They've worked on West Hall, for instance, which is the big building on the RPI campus that faces downtown. And they had done some work on a building in alongside Washington Park. He works nationally.
Okay. So you mentioned it now, sure. West Hall originally was designed by a man named Marcus Cummings, was it? And it was the hospital in Troy?
It was built as a hospital. There had been a hospital in St. Mary's Parish in South Troy. And it was operated by nuns in the 1850s. But once the Civil War, was underway, there were so many wounded soldiers that that hospital became very overcrowded. So they purchased the site where West Hall, now the building now known as West Hall, is located in 1867. They built it in stages. And in 1890, they put a great big wing on the front, which changed the appearance a great deal. But they also, again, ran out of space, and then they sold the building to RPI in the 1950s. Just earlier than that, it had been Catholic Central High School.
Huh. And so what does RPI use it for?
Oh, classrooms and faculty offices.
And since we're talking about Rensselaer Polytechnic Institute, they have an architecture school. In fact, your husband has a degree from them, right? Or
yes, he did.
Yeah. So do you think that impacted the architecture of Troy, having these people graduate? I mean, some of them hang around or do work in Troy?
I'm sure. Certainly, there was a guy whose name was David Hathaway, who in the mid-19th century was teaching architectural drawing there. So there's a long history of people who went there. I believe Frederick Cummings, who was a son of Marcus Cummings, and also an architect, was an RPI graduate.
Hmm. But there were a number of architects working on the buildings in Troy, and I gather a good part of your accomplishment here with this book is that you've traced that back. Maybe I'm speaking from ignorance here, but there's a building. It's not necessarily known who the architect was. To some extent, you had to find that out.
Oh, yes, definitely. Some of it certainly was known, by people who were interested in the history of the city. But it was really fun going back and reading some of the original diary entries, for instance, by, say, Alexander Jackson Davis, who was a nationally known architect who designed the what's now known as Cannon Place, which is on Monument Square, a commercial building that's still in use. And he also did another building up on the hill, which was a cottage, a very picturesque Gothic cottage for mm-hmm. the Warren family. And another guy that was very, very interesting to me, and I wasn't able to find out a great deal about him, was a man named Eugene Bonnet, He was a French railway architect, and he was brought to Troy to design a new Union Station. And he actually lived in Troy when it was being constructed. And it was supposed to be like the second largest railway station in the world.
Has that building survived?
No. It his building partially collapsed, which was unfortunate.
Yes.
But there was a big snowstorm, and maybe he didn't know about snow loads or wind loads or whatever in Troy. It was rebuilt a couple times. Then it was torn down, and a new station was built by nationally known railway architects, Reed and Stem. And then that was demolished, I think, in the 1950s or 60s.
Diana Waite is with us. She is the author of the book, The Architecture of Downtown Troy, an Illustrated History. We'll have more on the Historians Podcast in just a moment. Do want to mention to you our fundraising campaign, our GoFundMe campaign is in progress this year. You can donate online. Go to GoFundMe.com/2019-the-historians, and you can make a donation there. If you'd rather donate by check, you can make out a check to me, Bob Cudmore, and send to Bob Cudmore at 125 Horstman Drive, Scotia, New York, 12302. And thank you very much. We're talking with Diana Waite, who is author of The Architecture of Downtown Troy, an Illustrated History. That's a new book. We've talked about the architects. You mentioned your encounter or some information you gleaned from a local builder now or a craftsman working on some of your properties in downtown Troy. Who were the people that did the actual work building these buildings?
Well, that's something I really tried to emphasize in this book. It's not just about architects. It's about, you know, the contractors and the vendors of building materials. One of those men was William Howes. He had grown up in Vermont and Troy, and then went to Boston to be trained as a carpenter and builder. And he returned to Troy and often also provided architectural designs for his clients. There was a funny story in a letter by the carpenters for the Troy Savings Bank, who were complaining about the fact that the architect was not supplying the drawings for them quickly enough. So I guess, you know, some things never change. But it was also, you know, very dangerous work for these people. And there was one account that was just so sad where there was a row house being built with a big terracotta cornice, and there was scaffolding on another face of the building, but the terracotta cornice fell off of the building, brought down the scaffolding, and killed the bricklayer who was working there. So in terms of the materials, there, you know, Troy is really, if you come over the Green Island Bridge and look across the river to Troy, I mean, you really can see that it is a city with a lot of brick buildings, and that brick was usually made in the Hudson Valley. There are occasionally some marble fronted buildings with marble that had come from Westchester County, and the Troy Savings Bank granite came from Massachusetts. So there was a, you know, it was a big job to bring all those materials to Troy. There also were sort of leading interior design firms like the Tiffany firm, which did redid the interior of St. Paul's Episcopal church. Mm. So there's a long tradition of, you know, very good local crafts people and contractors, but also others that were brought in from further away.
Let me bring up something from the history timeline, if you will. I gather there was a major fire in Troy in 1862. What impact did that have on the buildings there?
Well, that was a terrible fire. There are great pictures of the damage that was done there. It looks like a war zone. There are facades that, you know, their former buildings where now there was only one facade left. The roofs were burned off. So it covered blocks and blocks, and hundreds of buildings were destroyed. But the other thing that was very interesting about that was that Troy was at that time a very prosperous city, and it was rebuilt immediately. And the people who were rebuilding, you know, had enough money to build really well. And I read one account that stated that one of the reasons they were able to rebuild, well, two reasons they were able to rebuild so quickly was, one, the fire occurred in May of 1862, so it was at the beginning of the building season, so they could get underway right away with the rebuilding, mm-hmm. but also the insurance claims were paid very promptly. So that had a big impact, too.
Certainly the 19th century was when Troy became Troy, or I mean, with all these buildings that you write about. The 20th century hasn't been so good, has it, for Troy economically?
Well, there were a lot of problems when industry moved west, for example, when the iron and steel industry moved. There was also, you know, the impact of the growth of the suburbs. When I first came to Troy, you really could shop there. You know, the retail was pretty good. There were some nice stores, but then with urban renewal, much of that part of downtown was torn down, and retail moved to Latham and Colony, mm-hmm. two malls there. So there were a lot of things, you know, that, as well as urban renewal itself coming in and just wanting to destroy even more than it did destroy. Mm-hmm. But things have really, you know, turned around. Certainly turned around since the 1970s or so, when things were sort of stagnating. And it's a very lively place now.
Really?
Well, that's... Yes, you are lucky to find a parking place
in Troy. Okay.
Yes.
Why should Troy's downtown buildings be preserved?
I think they're very important to attracting new residents. I know that there have been some apartment complexes built in the downtown area where they have been, completely leased before the building is even finished. I think that, you know, the historic buildings downtown certainly contribute to the city's economy and to its tax base. And, you know, on another sort of level, they really give the city a sense of place. It's not a cookie-cutter type of suburb situation.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very urban area.
Mm. But if, you know, there's an old building that needs work, that can be a complicated process. I mean, that's something you've also done a lot of work on, the techniques and the processes of historic preservation.
It is you know, it is complicated. There are always surprises, you know, that you come upon, as, you know, unexpected things. But, you know, you end up with a place that's got a lot of character and history, and it's a good place to work or live.
Mm. As Troy changed, how did the buildings in Troy change?
Well, certainly they changed stylistically. If you look at Marcus Cummings, for instance, he and later with his son, and then with his son on his own, you know, really kept up with the styles. And that was, you know, one type of change. Another type of change was that people, the clients kept up with new styles of living. There was an apartment building that was erected in 1906 called the Caldwell that is still there, still being used as apartments. And another change in the whole sort of architectural situation was that while people like Marcus Cummings would design buildings of all different functions, that had all different functions, as the 20th century, you know, came along, there were more architects hired who specialized in a particular building type, such as banks. They were nationally known architects, and, you know, they specialized in the construction of banks or hotels or theaters. Even the telephone company building was built by people who, by engineers who were experts at building telephone buildings.
Mm-hmm. And by now, Troy, does it have building renovation restrictions, you know, historic districts and things of that kind?
Yes. Yes, it does. And, you know, downtown is certainly part of that.
Mm. So, but buildings are still being built in Troy, or are they? I mean, are they mainly, as you and your husband did, are you mainly rehabilitating older buildings?
Oh, it's really both things. There's certainly a lot of people renovating historic row houses. I've been told it's difficult to find one to buy. But there are also people who, you know, investors who are putting up apartment buildings. There was a large extension built onto the Troy Record building,
mm-hmm.
With really lovely, you know, apartments. And as you come over the Green Island Bridge, there is it's at least four stories, maybe five, and the building at the former Record newspaper building, the new building, is also four stories.
Mm-hmm, okay.
So people are building very urban.
Thank you, Diana Waite, for joining us. She is author of the book, The Architecture of Downtown Troy, An Illustrated History. You've been listening to The Historian's Podcast, and I'm Bob Cudmore.